Evidence that random success goes to our head, with implications for widening economic inequality. I'm David Brancaccio. The incoming president of the United States is expected to nominate Rohit Chopra to be the next director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That's the outfit set up after the last financial crisis to prevent malefactors in the financial industry from taking advantage of people. Chopra, if confirmed, would be a big change, Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports.
Chopra, currently on the Federal Trade Commission, is a strong consumer advocate who has pushed to rein in businesses. If confirmed, it would be a homecoming of sorts. Chopra helped Senator Elizabeth Warren set up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. At the agency, he served as student loan ombudsman, advocating for reform. Since its inception in 2011, the Bureau has been a target of Republicans who have accused it of overreaching. The decision to appoint Chopra, as well as Gary Gensler, to run the Securities Exchange Commission signals the Biden administration's intention to more aggressively oversee consumer protections. Chopra's first priorities would likely be restoring the agency's focus on enforcing fair lending laws and cracking down on payday lenders. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
In just a couple of minutes now, Janet Yellen begins her confirmation hearing in the U.S. Senate to become the next U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. Senators know precisely who she is after her years as chair of the Federal Reserve. Let's say good morning to Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial in New York. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
So what are you going to do? I mean, really, she has an opportunity to talk about policy in a way that, had this been a more formal job interview, that she might not have had the chance.
Well, that's right. Her prepared testimony is basically a pitch for the $1.9 trillion stimulus proposed by President-elect Biden last week. So she will be in the Senate chamber pitching this new stimulus, which of course is partly COVID relief, but also a down payment on the incoming president's vision for spending in his first term.
And she's on the side of expansive stimulus, would you say?
Yes. And the reasoning is that even though we have a fairly large deficit, interest rates are so low, it makes sense to spend money now. Which, interestingly enough, right, is a message that we've also heard from officials at the Fed. So we're starting the year with fiscal and monetary policy very much aligned.
Chris Lowe, chief economist, FHN Financial. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
Our project Econ Extra Credit is starting a new chapter in this moment of fresh starts. Last year, we read a Shareware Economics 101 textbook. This year, it's about watching and learning. I'm viewing one documentary film each month, each with a marketplace theme, and I'd be personally delighted if you'd join in. January's movie is called Capital in the 21st Century, based on one of the most influential books about inequality of the last 10 years. And there's one scene in the film that shows how hard it is to address the widening gap between rich and poor. Researchers rigged a game of Monopoly, you know, Monopoly, so one player has a ridiculous random advantage based on a flip of a coin. The lead researcher is Paul Piff, a professor of psychology at the University of California, Irvine. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
So here are these players, one of them doing well because of a flip of a coin, the other one not doing well. And what happens to the players doing better? It kind of goes to their head.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what was notable is that within just a couple of minutes, dynamics start to crystallize. The rich player, they start banging the table piece louder with their piece as they move around. They started eating more pretzels and did so in ruder fashion. We had a bowl of pretzels positioned on the table. They start showcasing their property, their wealth. So kind of across all of these different indexes, we found that rich players acted as if they deserved to win.
They think it's their own awesomeness. You gotta love human beings, don't you, huh? I mean, we're just such great people.
And I think that's the kicker, is that at the end of the study, we ask rich players why they inevitably won. And they don't talk about the flip of the coin. They talk about the things that they did. They talk about their acumen. They talk about that decision or that thing that they did. And I think that this is a basic human bias that's true of all of us. And that is that when something good happens to you, I think because of the cognitive machinery that we're kind of equipped with, think about the things that we did that contributed to that success. And we see that in people who win in all walks of life. When you're winning, you think about the things that you did to help you win. The problem is that bias writ large, at least in the domain of inequality, it can get people who are winning at the game of life, who have more money, who have more privilege, who have more power, to be less likely to think that inequality is a problem because, after all, they deserve what they have. And as a result, be less willing to do things about it, be less willing to contribute to people who have less.
So your lab there works on really interesting things. I mean, you study this idea of inequality and altruism. Give us a taste of maybe something you're working on now.
Yeah, so one of the things we're really interested in is if it's the case that inequality in part is perpetuated because of the biases that emerge from inequality in the first place, well, we're really interested in what are the simple psychological levers that we could leverage to get people across the board to think about how life may not be fair and how things can happen just like a global pandemic that can all of a sudden cause people, through no responsibility of their own, to experience distress and to experience, for instance, even poverty or unemployment.
UC Irvine Professor Paul Piff, he's one of the many stars of the documentary film we're watching this month as part of our Econ Extra Credit project. The film is called Capital in the 21st Century. Professor, thank you for this.
Thanks so much, David.
That movie is available on many streaming services, both paid and free. In the same spirit of the intro economics book some of us were reading last year at this time, now, as I say, it's a documentary a month, each with an econ theme, maybe a workplace culture theme or something about the fascinating or corrupt corners of the market. And we have a newsletter to take you through them. You can join us by signing up at marketplace.org/newsletters. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.